Welcome to the Penguin Magic Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Tate, and joining me as always, my good buddy, Nick LaCapa. Nick,
hello.
How you doing?
Hello, hello, hello. Everything's good here.
Oh, excellent.
Missed you last week, right?
Yeah. Last week? I was moving into my new studio, which is, if you're watching this on YouTube, because for our audio listeners, Nick and I do this on YouTube every week. There's a hole behind me where I had some electrical work done.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah look at that.
Yeah.
That gives you a reason to go over to YouTube and take a look at this.
Yeah, check out my majestic hole.
This, yes.
that's going to end up on the jerks.
All right.
Let's talk a little bit about some new products this week, and then we got a fun, spicy topic to talk about. That comes to us from the listeners. The first of all is Prophecy Pen came out last week,
There's been a bunch of releases, right?
Yeah, so we've got Prophecy Pen, Flight Deck, and Unliftable are the three things we're going to talk about today. Mm-hmm. So Prophecy Pen was a product that was created by our in-house team, and then I had kind of a fun prediction, like open prediction type effect with it, and you get it for free this week, I think.
Yeah, it was either this week or last week. Yeah. We kind of do those things on Fridays now, where if you spend a special amount, like you end up getting a trick absolutely free that's, you know, sold on the website. And I think Prophecy Pen was definitely one of those. We're going to be doing that a lot more.
Yeah.
If you haven't noticed, it's kind of like in the place of the magazine.
Yeah, I think that's kind
of
weird.
Did anybody notice that the magazine vanished at one point? I have no idea. But yeah, so you end up getting a free trick like you used to get in the magazine if you spend a certain amount. But yeah. Prophecy Pen, yeah, that's a fun one. It's just a cool little pen, the utility device for, you know, mental style magic. It works the best for, because you're able to write one thing in one color ink and then, you know, have a prediction in another color ink, but you're secretly writing that prediction in the moment. So
yeah,
a lot of fun things you can do with it.
Yeah. I'm kind of excited to see where the community goes with it, because it feels like one of those old school mentalism, like utility devices that there's probably a bunch of stuff you can do with. That was just the one, the one routine you shipped with.
Sure.
The thing I'm real excited about is Flight Deck by Steve Gore.
Mm.
So if you're,
He
was in not too long ago. And if you're unfamiliar with this, it's an edge marking system. It tells you suit and value. And so you can do things like have somebody select a card, have it lost in the deck. They can shuffle it, and then you can find the card.
Mm-hmm. It's a follow-up to his original GPS deck. So if you're a fan of the GPS deck, you're going to find very much the same system and design.
Mm-hmm.
However, it has a white border now, which was a big point of contention from the first one, because the first one was like a full colored back. I think it was all blue.
Yeah.
But this one just has its own white border now. So you can have the deck completely shuffled and have it in the spectator's hands. They name a card. You take the deck back and you are able to, you know, without having to look at the back of every single card in the deck, you're able to find the card that they just freely named from a completely shuffled deck. And, you know, obviously the tricks from there are up to your own imagination.
Edge marking systems are pretty cool. They come from the gambling world. So you used to just use it for location. I actually use a fair amount of edge marking in my day-to-day work with like my ace locations and stuff like that. But being able to quickly get to a specific card without having to like look through the backs, like you basically bevel the deck a little bit and it gives you all of the knowledge. And don't sleep on the fact that it's white bordered now, because you could not do reverse card stuff before because of the way the color system is. But the new design allows you to like really make this an everyday carry.
Yeah. And I know there's a lot of people out there familiar with the other edge mark deck out in the market, the butterfly deck.
Yep.
Great deck of cards.
Mm-hmm.
The big difference between the two of these is that one of them is a one-way deck, as in the cards need to stay in the same alignment. The butterfly deck is.
Yeah.
But this GPS deck, it doesn't matter in which way the cards are shuffled.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter end for end which way they are. You'll always know the position of all the cards. So it's a cool one.
Yeah.
And when it's one of those two, when it goes out of stock, who knows?
Yeah.
So grab it if you're interested.
Yeah, and some great tricks by Steve Gore on that. Like,
man, Steve's been passionate about this Edgemark deck for, I want to say, 10 years now. So if anybody's found the tricks to do with it, Steve has, and they're on this video.
And then the last one that I wanted to talk about was, this is actually not a Penguin product. This is somebody else's. Inyaki created this. Unliftable. It's the light and heavy, like light and heavy chest, but built into a card box.
Yeah, and this is fun.
Yeah, this was a big hit at Blackpool, and then we ended up talking with them and bringing their product on board. And I got to perform with this and come up with like a little sort of like rapid induction hypnosis routine where you remove somebody's ability to pick up a deck of cards.
And yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
It's like one of those kind of holy grail tricks where, I mean, you've heard of it, the light heavy thing where the sword and the stone, you know, you can't pick it up, but the other person can. And to be able to have that in an everyday carry card box is crazy. And I've seen lots of methods in the past and like, they're not, you know, like there's the old suction cup method and all that type of stuff. They all have some element of like, oh, I can tell this is just like stuck to the table in some other way. This one's different.
Yeah.
Feels different when you try it. It's, and man, is it locked on there? You would think you would be able to rip this thing off the surface. You really can't. You really can't. So it's a fun one for sure. It's a great moment to give to your spectator.
So if you, I'm actually thinking about shooting like a special tutorial for this to teach a couple of things that I picked up with it. Cause it comes with a tutorial from the creator. But I discovered some things along the way. So A, we should let you know, you do need to have a smooth surface. Like I tried to do it in my regular restaurant gig at Town Hall, but they've got these wooden tables and it just won't adhere to them. So you want a slick bar top, or like, you know, I did it in the full performance, I did it in their shop. So we've got like a glass case and it works really well on stuff like that.
Yeah.
But if you're in like a bar situation, you can do a thing where you can give them their strength back, where if you put it down and it's just like, just the edge of the box is like kind of on like a napkin or a business card or a playing card, just anything that won't allow it to adhere itself to the table, you can give them their strength back, which was one of those things that I sort of like kind of learned on the fly while performing it. And it's makes a nice for a nice little moment. And you just have to kind of be mindful of the way you do that, so it feels organic.
Yeah, it's fun. You can also carry around a deck of cards in it. So
yeah, that's the other thing, is it's like it's your
this is a device that will carry your cards.
Almost like a card box.
Yeah, almost like a card box. So you're gonna use a card box anyway. If you like the sound of the trick, I think you'll love it.
All right, let's get into the topic this week. So this comes to us from a listener who wanted to know our thoughts and methodology for teaching on YouTube, which is, a very controversial topic in Magic.
Thoughts and methodology on teaching on YouTube.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I haven't officially written my thoughts and methodology, or you know, I don't have an official stance. I can say that, like, I have no problem with YouTube teaching, exposure, whatever. I'm, you know, maybe I didn't quite agree with it at first, or who knows? I can't even remember my history with it. I think I was always still starving for information during this era as well. So anything that somebody was sharing online, I was like open to watching it. But I get it. I get why people were upset back in the beginning. Now I think I'd rather good information just be out there. There's no stopping this train of teaching and exposure online, but so you know, you might as well just make sure people are learning the good stuff.
I tend to agree. You know, when you know, you and I, if the listeners don't know, we've been producing these freemium products where we do tutorials that are pretty quick on YouTube that that sort of direct you to a page on Penguin Magic where you can learn a more in-depth tutorial, and we can like really take our time and do the real teaching that we're supposed to be doing. And I mean, obviously it's a sales tool, but at the same time, I was very hesitant at first to do it, because I know that they're great teachers like Spidey on YouTube who just sort of like for some reason seemed to draw the ire of the Magic community. And I really didn't want to, because it's important to me to sort of like act in good faith with the Magic community. So I was very concerned at first, but now I'm really coming around to like really enjoying it, because A, I think that we do a good job of teaching things that are generally in the like public domain for Magic, while also focusing it so that you have to be looking for a Magic tutorial and looking for something kind of specific. So it's not like I'm just like, it's not like we're just throwing the information out and like, and exposing it.
If you come to the Penguin Magic channel, you've all of a sudden stumbled into a world of learning and purchasing Magic. I mean, anybody can buy Magic.
Yeah.
Anybody can come to our website and pay for a Magic trick. It's the value that you put on it. I agree with you. The format that we have, I think, is a pretty smart one, because, you know, we all also kind of know that YouTube is a place where people have no attention span or the longest attention span, but nothing in between. So to be able to like quickly, you know, teach some things to get some people interested, but then invite them over to the website where it's not a paywall, because the extra video is free, but you're able to go more long form and teach in a more traditional Magic tutorial style and get people, you know, kind of into the world of learning and performing Magic a little bit. So, yeah, I would think the people that are stumbling across our videos aren't just like people that are searching for how a trick is done, but even those people are probably people that might get interested into Magic, right? But we're having people that are searching for it.
I think it's that paywall thing that you mentioned, which is where the listener's question comes from about like our thoughts and methodology on it, because it seems to me that the whole magicians never reveal their secrets. Well, we know that's not true, because magicians share stuff with each other all the time.
Yeah. And for $9.95.
But there has to be a barrier to entry.
Sure.
Right? And so we're creating, and for us, it seems like we've set our barrier for entry at, you must show an interest in learning Magic. And then, and the answer is, yeah, no problem. I'll teach you. I'm not just going to expose it for exposure's sake. You have to express an interest. And typing in, learning how to do a card trick, is really the only barrier there should be.
I also believe that, like, I always, when I first got into Magic, I really liked that, like, I knew the moves and the creator of the moves and things like that. I had, you know, but I didn't know that that was something that the Magic community like really cherished, especially coming from my background in video game history, where we relentlessly steal any good idea from anybody with zero credit whatsoever.
Yeah.
So when I got into Magic and like the fact that moves had names and they had like somebody's name associated with it, I always just thought that was fun and cool and something that I remembered. But these days, that can be a thing that kind of sucks when it's taught poorly, because like even as a student, if I'm watching that video, if you were to tell me that move exists in Harry Lorraine's Apocalypse, well, then that's another step that I might go down and open a book that has a billion tricks in it, right? And I mean, isn't that the type of person that we want in Magic?
Yeah.
So yeah, there's people that don't do a great job in teaching it, but what are you gonna do, right? You're gonna do, is that the hill you want to die on?
Yeah.
Out there, I mean, I it's not for me. And the few, you know, that this whole argument of like people being really upset, like the people you were talking about with Spidey, it kind of feels old at this point, right?
Feels
like a thing gone past. There's plenty of crazy tutorials out there. I search for them all the time. I mean, it's a quicker resource for me these days, where I'm like, who came up with that backflip coin appearance? And usually you can find it on YouTube in an incredibly well shot, well taught video. And it's like, bam, got it. Otherwise I'd have to, you know, not that any of this is bad, but it's harder to find that information sometimes. And even for me, who has a well-stocked library and everything else. So the more we can document, and then, I don't know, the future, Eric, I heard this recently. of that thing, that thing called AI. Do you know about, have you heard about this?
I keep getting asked if I'm worried about my job for AI, and the answer
Oh,
is no, not
no,
in any way, shape, or
no.
form.
However, I read an article the other day that said they are approaching a point where they've consumed all human data. Like they're becoming like a data source shortage for AI to consume. Like they've read every book and consumed and scraped every YouTube video. And do you know what I mean?
That's wild.
So like that means magic information as well. So it's either you're gonna learn it from a guy that's done it a bunch of times on YouTube, or you're just gonna ask a robot and they're gonna tell you how it works too, right? So it's and we'll long forget about Spidey teaching YouTube the tricks on YouTube.
It kind
So
of, at the end of the day, like, I'm not crazy. My audience isn't six. We all know this isn't real, right? Like, I preserving the mystery for me is more about learning those performance things that you couldn't learn elsewhere. Because, like, if you just want to know the secret, like, fine. Like, anybody can find out the secret to almost anything in my show. For actually, you can learn all the secrets to my show by looking up my name and downloading my Penguin Live Act for $39.99. Like that's just it. You can do that. You have to want to do that and wade through it all, but the reason you like the show isn't for the secrets. It's all the other stuff around it.
And I one other thing is that I think it's made all of us better magicians as well. I remember when I was starting out magic before YouTube, I would do sleight of hand tricks. They were my thing. Bad sleight of hand too. And it would blow people's minds, right? Like I feel like YouTube has given everybody like a very subconscious baseline sleight of hand understanding of what's good and bad. And I think they see a lot of it on Instagram, YouTube, wherever, and they've seen good sleight of hand, they've seen bad sleight of hand, and they're just more aware of moves and things these days. So I've really drawn back the amount of sleight of hand I've used because I noticed it over time. I'm like, why this trick used to get a better reaction? Why isn't it now? Well, it's because, they've just consumed a bunch of videos and now they know to look at the other hand or whatever. So it's I had to start getting better myself to avoid these things. I always attributed that to America's Got Talent and YouTube and everything. So I mean, we're just 10, 15 years down the path on this now, and I think the general public has a better understanding of what sleight of hand magic is. They know where to learn it if they want to learn it. But I don't think that is a problem.
I don't think it's a problem either. And it just keeps making it, like, the fun in the creative process for magic is discovering a new way to fool someone, right? And so, like, maybe that is a piece of sleight of hand, or maybe it's learning to design the trick better, or learning how to make a prop. I mean, there's so many awesome parts of learning magic. How do you decide what to teach in your freemium videos? Like, I know that at a high level, maybe the audience isn't aware, but we have a weekly meeting where a group of people discuss, like, what your and I's next video is. But then once we get that assignment, like, Eric, go teach a trick on basic card slice for beginners. How do you pick your
Like
stuff?
right now, I'm working on my top five coin slights. And it's I just take it literally. What are my top five coin slights? So I have to really think about, what coin slights do I use the most? Because those are the ones I know the most about. So those are the ones I'm going to share. Yes, there's some exceptions. I know that we're trying to get people to watch it, so you might want some more visual style things. So it's a mixture of what do I know how to do, and then what will play correctly for the format, which would be YouTube and then eventually the Penguin site as well. And then just a quick, like, kind of compile all that stuff, make a nice list, and then figure out, what can I teach? I'm not going to teach somebody's coin slight that. that is, only on their Penguin Live lecture or something like that. Unless, of course, I reached out to them and asked them, but I still don't want it to necessarily exist on a free video on YouTube.
Yeah.
I'd rather talk about it on the Penguin video and send them over to the link there. So I try to figure out what is, there's like a, it's an unwritten rule, right? Like just like these kind of either public domain books or like even just like some that aren't public domain, like Modern Coin Magic, not public domain, but literally there's like everybody, everything in there has been taught on YouTube. I think the entirety of Modern Coin Magic is on
Yeah.
YouTube. I mean, it really is the fundamentals of coin magic that are all in that book. So anything in there kind of feels like free game at this point, but it's hard to find any new coin magic that's not in there as well. So with the coins, it's pretty easy. If it's in there, I'm like, oh, good. At least it originates there. And it gives me a great point of reference to send somebody if they want to learn it. You can pick up Modern Coin Magic at Barnes and Noble. So,
Yeah.
it's probably $2 on Amazon, right? So, like, yeah, it's cool. That's basically it. I don't really have any other secrets other than that. But
Yeah.
yeah, most of it, I just want to make sure it's stuff that I do know something about.
I think it's coming down to figuring out what is somebody else's and what is and what's off limits. Because we keep talking about the public domain books. I've been doing a lot of card stuff, so I keep referring to Royal Road to Card Magic, Encyclopedia of Card Tricks, Expert Card Technique. Again, if Dover publishes it, it's probably fair game as far as I'm concerned. And then making sure that I'm not teaching someone's thing specifically, and getting those permissions where we can. I was talking to a friend of mine who's an intellectual property lawyer. And she was telling me that when she was in school, that they studied the magic community because there's no real good way to protect our intellectual property in the United States. Because you can't patent a trick. Like you can patent a device, but patents become public knowledge, so we don't typically go that route, right? Like the way other magicians learned to saw people in half was P.T. Selbit. Like patented the original song in Half Illusion, and then literally weeks later, other people started doing it. David Copperfield's Flying Illusion is patented, but it's widely thought that he patented a false method, right?
Probably,
Which is also a great part of the myth. But it's all kind of down to we as a community have to act ethically in protecting each other's intellectual property, because there's just not a lot we can do. And it's just like peer pressure and social pressure that keeps us from that's the reason I'm not teaching, the clip shift, or Derek's truffle shuffle. So it's
Yeah, and those things are I mean, they might even be taught out there, who knows,
yeah.
without permission. But the ones that I do have a problem with, I'm sure you've seen them on, like, they're just exposure for exposure's sake.
Yeah, I think.
Those ones suck. Still, I'm not going to go out in my yard and scream at the sky.
Yeah.
They do suck that they exist, but it also, they're exposing kind of crappy tricks. Tricks they got access to.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to be able to expose your silk to egg, where the silk comes out of your leg there, Eric. Or like how Nick the Duck actually smokes a cigarette.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of how it goes.
Yeah, the exposure for exposure sake videos, I get why people get mad. I think that people take it a little too far sometimes. 'Cause at the end of the day, it's just tricks, bro. You're not like if you expose somebody's trick, you're not actually taking food out of their mouth, because it's not no one is gonna be like, oh, well, I know that the lady hides in the steps of the thing, so I'm not gonna go see
Sure. Yeah, it's all
this
part of the
illusionist.
game too, right? Like the fact that those videos exist further promote good magic videos on the internet, because the people that are watching those are probably also watching you. I don't know, people love magic online, which is why all these things have tons of views.
It's just like more about like treating our art form with respect, and like there's just better ways to deliver that kind of information, right?
Yeah, you can control what you do, but this stuff isn't going anywhere.
Yeah,
it's probably just, you know, it's going to be, you'll be able to ask Siri how a trick is done pretty soon. And
Bill and Lemon is on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure.
Like you can just do that. Right. The information is out there. If you don't like a video, don't give it the juice. Don't click on it. Don't watch it. Don't share it with your friends and say, look at this idiot. Like, that's just, you're just getting them what they want. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and you'll never get to be a part of the fun community as well that we all hang out in, most likely. I mean, I definitely know some of those exposure guys that are out there, and if they showed up at a convention, I don't think there'd be a warm welcome for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like I mean, that's at the end. Like, it kind of comes down to like, do you want to hang with like some cool people? Then don't do that. Like. It's really down to what you want to do.
Yeah. All good.
Yeah. Well, Nick, what do you got coming up?
What do I got coming up? Yeah. Oh, back at a castle, a couple of weeks.
Oh, that'll be cool.
Yeah. May 6th through 12th.
Mm-hmm.
6th through 12th. I guess any castle guys out there, you can, don't forget to vote for me for Stage Magician of the Year. That would be cool. Why not?
The voting is up now, right? Yeah. So any castle people out there need to vote for me for close-up magician of the year. Our campaigns are officially starting now.
I'm easily, you know, what do you need? No, that's fun. So I'll be back there on the 6th through the 12th. I got some, I think I'm going to do mostly new stuff.
Oh, that's dope.
Yeah, I think so. I'll be there with Chipper Lowell and Rocco in the Palace show.
Rocco Solano?
It's going to be Italian week at the on the main stage.
Oh, man. You can't get in to see the main stage unless you had your pasta bolognese.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be a good one. Yeah.
And then we got,
I don't know what to expect.
And then we got the award show coming up.
That's Friday?
Yeah. Right. So we're recording this on a Tuesday. It drops on Thursday. So tomorrow is when the award show comes out. And I think you and I are both planning to like hang in the YouTube chat while that's premiering live.
Yeah, I think so. Oh, do I have a show then? I might have a show that night.
Oh, you might have a show that night.
We'll find out.
Yeah. Well, we'll try and be in there for a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I actually, I went to Chicago over the weekend to go see Norberto Janssensen at the Magic Lounge.
Oh, yeah?
He's a guy that he put out a trick during COVID that I really liked. It was called Divine. You can get it on Penguin. Oh, very cool. Very cool trick. Anyway, he messaged me, told me that he was going to be there, and like, wow, I had like a free weekend for once in my life. So I was like, screw it, let's go.
That's dope.
So I went out there, and I'm not going to say who was there, but one of the winners was just happened to be at the lounge.
Really?
One of the winners just happened to be at the lounge that night. And I don't know how much I can say, but we had the trophies in the trunk of my car. So we presented him the trophy. We got it on camera. You'll see that in the award show, which is very fun.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Surprised him.
I feel like we
had to come over to our table and do magic. So we showed him the real trick, right?
Oh, that's so funny. So he didn't even know.
No. No.
Oh, that's incredible. That's going to be that's going to be so wonderful in the final cut of the award.
Yeah, so we got some nice iPhone footage of that for you. So.
I got a couple of fun interviews coming up later today with some people that'll be on in a few weeks. So we're gonna have Leah Orleans back on. Speaking of Chicago, you know, the daughter of the incredible Jan Rose, the MC and empress mm-hmm. of the Chicago Magic Lounge.
And, oh, yes,
and
for sure.
Danny Orleans. So she's got a fun announcement that'll be coming out soon.
Yeah, Leah?
Yeah, Leah's going to be working on a new convention, actually. I think she's on.
Oh, the- yeah, I've heard about it.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that'll be fun. So she's going to be on the podcast in a week or so talking about that, which will be fun.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm excited to hear more about it.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. And then the one other thing I'll tease is don't have an exact timeline for it yet, but I know stuff has been booked. And I had a sort of pre-filming conversation this afternoon, but the lectures are coming back.
Lectures.
Yeah, we got a couple lectures that are going to be coming back this year. So keep your eyes and ears tuned to hear more information about that, to find out not only who we have coming into lecture, but when those are going to drop.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, I'm very excited for those. Well, all that being said, I think that'll do it for this week, Nick.
Sounds good. Everybody.
Thanks, everyone, for hanging out. I'm going to kick it over to myself and Cody Clark. See you next time. Thanks so much to Nick for being on the show. To see our freemium tutorials, go check out the Penguin Magic YouTube channel. We've been sharing some pretty cool stuff over there. On to the main event. Cody Clark is a touring magician and speaker who is not just on the autism spectrum, but he combines his lived experience with magic and motivational speaking to educate and entertain. A few weeks ago, Cody was on tour and he stopped by the magic shop at the P3 Magic Theater. I grabbed some of his time to discuss his unique show and motivational speaking, and now you get to join our conversation. Cody Clark, thanks so much for joining me here on the Penguin Magic Podcast. It's good to have you with us. For those of our audience listeners who don't know you, would you mind introducing yourself?
Well, I'm Cody Clark, and I am a professional magician from Louisville, Kentucky, which is already a magical city with Lance, Max, Steve Bargatze. But my contribution to magic is, with me being on the autism spectrum, I use my shows to spread awareness, to make magic more accessible to audiences of all kinds. And to, I use targeted marketing to make a new way of being a professional magician, that instead of just being like, here's a magic show and here's how much I charge, mm-hmm. I pre-select audiences that are most likely to like my weird combo of magic with story. Mm-hmm. And then I essentially create the show that I wanted to create. Then I go out and find the audiences who are predisposed to liking that.
Oh, that's really fascinating. Because most magicians will just sort of like turn up anywhere that someone will let them shuffle a deck of cards, but it's not often you hear a magician choosing the audience rather than the audience choosing the magician.
Exactly, and I learned that from business school. Pretty much day one of going to the University of Louisville College of Business, I learned about targeted marketing, mm-hmm. and I even knew then this was the big nugget I would take out of that degree. Mm-hmm. And then that only got reinforced when Jonah Babbins during the pandemic became my business coach. Mm-hmm. And he really helped me scale it up, systemize it, taught me about hiring web scrapers in the Philippines because mm-hmm. I knew the targeted market to mm-hmm. send them to. So now I have web scrapers who know about disability orgs, colleges, corporations.
Wow.
And then I just have a big email outreach machine along with the repeat clients.
That is really fascinating. Now, you do some speaking, so you do some speaking surrounding autism and magic and sort of the intersection of the two. Am I correct on that?
You are correct, at least for certain contexts, like the corporate audiences and sometimes campus activities audiences will want that too. And there's a few different topics. There's the keynote, which is essentially autism 101. Mm-hmm. Then there's one called self-employment while autistic. And actually, I did a condensed version of that for the U.S. House of Representatives Small Business Committee recently.
Wow. Really?
Yep. My local representative, Morgan McGarvey, is part of the U.S. House of Representatives Small Business Committee. Mm-hmm. And they were doing a special meeting on entrepreneurship and employment. Mm-hmm. And he knew that as good as disability services have become with employment and with remembering that autistic and disabled people above the age of 18 exist, mm-hmm. that there's not a lot of services for self-employment yet. So we thought I could speak on that.
You know, it's sort of interesting because I think that when the average person sort of thinks with or engages with someone who's on the autism spectrum, they're generally thinking of a child. They're not thinking of an adult. And with more and more, with the condition becoming better understood, we're seeing more and more people on the spectrum, and it sounds like something that a savvy performer should keep in mind.
Oh, I 100% agree. Even if you're not on the spectrum yourself, there's lots of opportunities for people to perform for adult daycares mm-hmm. or for assisting with what's called pre-ETS, pre-employment transition services. Mm-hmm. You could certainly do talks about being self-employed. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I am thankful for the about the first 7 years of my career, I was the autistic magician. Mm-hmm. Now there's a few others following behind me, like Jordan Allen out of Murray, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And Jake Lindsay out of Ohio.
Yeah.
There's starting to be kind of like in the 70s and 80s how there was this lane for blind pianists.
Yeah.
It seems, I don't know if it's entirely because of me, but I'd say at least partially, there's now a lane for this disability mm-hmm. advocate magician we're seeing in magic.
What should a magician consider when he may have someone on the spectrum in their audience is like, cause that's obviously something that you deal with every day with being on the autism spectrum, but what would you like other magicians as they're putting their shows together to consider?
I do speak on this in full in my lecture, but in mm-hmm. short, don't do exactly the same magic show you would do anywhere. Mm-hmm. Learn about the sensory inputs and how they might be different for us, mm-hmm. like super loud noises, super bright lights, mm-hmm. like especially the really bright Seo version of D-Lights. Don't do something that bright.
I think that you shouldn't use those regardless of whether somebody's on the spectrum. those super bright lights are just blinding for anyone, I think. But now as you are here right now. This is one of the few podcasts that I've done in person recently because you're on tour right now.
Yep, I had a big tour that included Pittsburgh, Hiram, Ohio, Mansfield, Newark, and New Philly yesterday. Because mm-hmm. March, with it being Disability Awareness Month, April being Autism Month, mm-hmm. those tend to be my version of Christmas.
Just strike while the iron is hot in the spring, I would say.
Exactly. I'm the reverse of a lot of magicians. Most are busy during Christmas. Mm-hmm. I actually get to celebrate Christmas properly, but my March and April, I know I have to sacrifice.
Oh, that's wonderful. How does your show differ? Because I know that you said you do, we talked a little bit off pod before we jumped in, but you said you serve two different college markets. You serve sort of the standard college market where people are, I'm assuming you're going through like APCA or NACA.
I go through APCA. What I've been mm-hmm. told is succeed at APCA, then try NACA.
Gotcha. I actually, just side note, Eric Lambert, the guy who runs APCA, I was in a show with him for 4 years in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee.
Yeah, he owns the Comedy Barn.
Yes, yeah, he does. And he's a really great guy, and APCA is a great organization. And then you also serve the disability.
The reason I actually started doing APCA is so I could double dip. Mm-hmm. A lot of college disability departments are really robust and have their own funding. Mm-hmm. So I would start by going to them direct. Mm-hmm. But not every campus has a disability department that robust, or their disability department didn't want me for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. So I wanted this other lane to get into. And I don't entirely want to preach to the choir. I also want to gain new converts to the cause.
Yeah.
So especially with campus activities going more toward the kind of show I do rather than the just for fun, mm-hmm. we're having a party type of show, I thought now would be a good time for me to enter the college market. Mm-hmm. And the campus activities market is indeed it takes longer than directly contacting a disabilities department. Mm-hmm. So maybe I opened up a new lane for people to enter colleges without going through APCA or NACA. Mm-hmm. But I am very glad I've gone through APCA. I have an agent there now. Mm-hmm. And all this tour except the New Philly date came from APCA.
When you're serving the disability program versus the main entertainment portion of the program, how does your show differ?
Well, the big difference is I do more of the talks for the disability department because they're bringing me there to help the students transition onto campus effectively. Mm-hmm. And also with campus activities, some of the students know I'm going to be there, but as you know, as Michael Kennis said, nowadays you kind of have to recruit your audience during that lunch hour.
Yeah.
So Tyler Corso, do you know him?
Yeah, I do know Corso.
He helped me write a joke that's essentially an autism version of the if you don't like the magic, that's the comedy. If you don't like the comedy, that's the magic joke. Essentially, how do you know the difference between magic and autism?
How?
Oh my God, how'd you do that? Is the magic. Oh my God, why did you do that? Is the autism.
With being on the spectrum, how do you think that has How do you think that you engage with magic as a craft and a hobby and a profession differently than perhaps somebody who is not neurodivergent?
Well, I have to work harder on the motor skills part of it. Mm-hmm. Many people focus on the bad social skills and on the social emotional parts of autism, but it's also a physical disorder too, especially with muscle tone.
Mm-hmm.
I personally really like working hard on sleight of hand magic because it's harder for me than everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have to kind of pick my battles. Like, I'm not going to be your jamming expert, mm-hmm. but I've got a good linking ring routine. Mm-hmm. I like a lot of the card magic from the Dan Harlan Tarbell lessons.
Yeah.
So it is more rewarding when I get to do more complex sleight of hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also think it's helped with my improv skills because most autism therapies are just like learning improv, as you would know, yes and.
Mm-hmm.
So having to learn conversations by hand where everyone else just is born knowing how to have conversations,
mm-hmm.
that makes me approach scripting differently, I think.
Yeah.
And it allows me, when I'm in different cities, to bring in different pop culture references.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I joked a lot about the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
And now I got to add a bit to a joke I make about Shakespeare once I realized Shakespeare's ancient Kate Middleton conspiracy theories.
That is fascinating. When you're sitting down to script, is it, are you writing full scripts and memorizing them?
Oh, yes. My specialty is scripts. There are two routines I've invented, but for the most part, I buy routines at conventions and from Penguin or watch like Dan Harlan Tarbell lessons or read mm-hmm. books. And then I never do the script that comes with it. I always write my own,
mm-hmm.
usually from my own life experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that is where music influences me more than magic, that emotional authenticity, country music, blues music, as both of those have.
Mm-hmm.
The I'm really living this authenticity that a lot of magic doesn't have. I lifted that from music and applied it to magic.
You know, you've mentioned a couple times about like autism having sensory issues and things like that. I'm curious because most magic is very sort of, you know, it's the idea is to overload the sensory. How did you come to magic as an art form and a hobby?
Well, I always wanted to be a performer, but it was hard finding the thing I was good at.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I couldn't sing or else I'd be a singer.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't dance. I didn't know where to go for acting.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was 11, this guy who's normally a Branson magician and whose kid was on America's Got Talent,
mm-hmm.
Bart Rocket, his kid is Caden Rocket.
Okay, yeah.
He was in Gulf Shores the year I needed him to be because
mm-hmm.
he was doing the show there. And I was mesmerized from the beginning. I already thought about buying the sock of magic he sold. Mm-hmm. Then he brought me up on stage. And the mm-hmm. way he did Audience Dismemberment by Jim Steinmeier was having the participant do it from picking the random girl from the audience to putting the blade in.
Mm-hmm.
Taking a kid who couldn't play football or basketball, who made just B's or C's, and making them saw a lady in half.
Mm-hmm.
That was empowering.
That is amazing. It sounds like that was a deeply effective thing in your life and probably changed not just gave you the interest in magic, but probably changed the way that you approach magic in general.
Oh, 100%. My favorite effects to do, I think because of that, are effects where I can hand the audience member the secret mm-hmm. and have them do it without fully knowing how. Like Henry Evans's version of the rising card where the gimmick's built in.
Yeah.
I can hand that to a participant and have them do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jay Sankey Sponge earplugs, not just because they're making the earplugs expand and mm-hmm. then morph into the big one,
mm-hmm.
but I'd really had to wear earplugs a lot as a kid due to sensory issues.
Yeah, yeah, that's man, that is fascinating. And it seems interesting to me that you would be so fascinated by something that would seem so counter because of sensory issues, but it seems like you've really dove in and figured out how to not just make it work for you, but work for your audiences.
Exactly. And I think part of it is I figured which senses I was still cool with and which most of my audiences weren't.
Mm-hmm.
Like visual, of course, unless it's a blind audience, visual will be fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare. I would say with visual, don't do like your kabuki streamers where it's boom, boom, mm-hmm. back.
Yeah.
And then noises are probably the biggest concern.
Mm-hmm.
So noises like Miser's Dream Bell Buckets.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do linking rings, but it's more like Richard Ross and then the Jeff McBride routine before he does all the shapes and stuff.
Yeah.
There's silent. You can explore for like more silent linking rings, more silent Miser's Dream if you still like those effects a lot.
You know, but I think that on some level, the playing with silence with linking rings is almost more fun than a lot of the big crash stuff, because when they click together, you know that it's solid. But then when there's no noise as it passes, it and playing with when you do a crash link versus a silent link, I think can result in a much more beautiful and more elegant routine.
I 100% agree, and I noticed that in my audiences too. It's more fun, like when I'm doing the Richard Ross moves, and then it's on my arm, giving them a second to be like, "Oh, that's what happened."
Yeah, yeah, it definitely catches them way off guard. And I've never actually considered a silent Miser's Dream routine, because it seems like the noise is so integral to the effect. But if you start to remove that thing that's integral, it can result in you having to answer the question, what is this Miser's Dream routine, in a much more interesting and dynamic way.
Yeah, limitations force creativity, as they say.
Yes, yes. Limitations, sorry. I thought you said levitations for a second. Levitations also force creativity, but in a much different way.
Force creativity against gravity.
Yes, exactly. So what's next for you? So you've done this tour, and you're going to be going on to another tour soon?
I do get a break for a few days, and I'm back in Cohoeston County for a Board of Developmental Disability School Assembly. Mm-hmm. And then April, with it being Autism Month, I got a bit more touring, and actually still some dates are being set right now. Mm-hmm. Let me look at my calendar really quick. I do get a break the first 2 weeks of last week of March, first week of April, thankfully. Mm-hmm. And I have some school assemblies. I have a disability advocacy conference in Charlotte. Might be getting something in Detroit. Mm-hmm. And then Jonah's taking all his students on a mastermind summit in Cancun, Mexico.
Oh, that sounds like it's going to be amazing.
Anything with I'm in the mastermind program. And what the mastermind program is great for that Jonah does is explaining business like you're five.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I definitely need business explained to me like I'm five sometimes. I may be able to do some amazing things with a deck of cards, but sometimes it's a miracle if I can balance my own checkbook.
Yeah, business is not for the faint of heart, and I'm saying that as a magician.
Yeah.
The most complicated sleight of hand is easier than the easiest business concept.
I completely agree there. Well, what is, we have more and more young people getting into magic now, and more and more neurodivergent young people getting into magic. What would your advice be to them? Because this is something that you've really taken hold of, and you haven't just embraced magic as a passion, you've embraced magic as a career, and you're using it to sort of inspire and change other people's lives. And so, you know, if you were to talk to a young person now who's in your same position, what would you say to them?
I would say learn about good goal setting, making a big goal, breaking it down into small chunks. Mm-hmm. And that's one reason I think magic worked out so well for me, is most magic instructions are exactly that already. Mm-hmm. But being like, I want to learn this complicated sleight of hand routine, that may be a few years off, but here's this building block I can master, have fun fooling people. Mm-hmm. Then you go to the intermediate thing. And Jeff McBride also phrases it as practice the hard stuff, perform the easy stuff.
I need to take that advice more. Let's talk a little bit about your public speaking, because you don't just do magic. You also do keynote speaking. You mentioned that a little bit earlier. Can you expound a little bit upon, did that come before the magic or after the magic?
That came after the magic. That was my initial lifeline out of the pandemic hell that we all went through.
Yes. A mild way to put it.
Well, I went through the same grief all the other magicians did with not being able to do shows. And then once you slowly start discovering virtual shows at the same time, my fan base that I built up from doing fringe theater festivals and my earliest few gigs within the disability advocacy world, they were like, our students are also suffering from the pandemic. They need to be retrained in these skills. Can you do this speech with tricks in it? Mm-hmm. And that gave me my first bit of speaking experience, and also not just a way out, but a way forward to the future that coincided well with me becoming one of Jonah's business students.
You know, I forgot where you and I met until you mentioned it just now, which was the Fringe Festivals. Because when I did my very first Fringe Festival, you were very kind to reach out and offer help and advice on that. And I think, can you talk a little bit about your experience in producing Fringe shows? Because I think that's something that more magicians should take a look at.
Oh, 100%. It's a good training ground for when you first decide you want to be a professional magician. Mm-hmm. It's not the market to make your full-time living in, but it's a good market to workshop your show. Because Fringe, I think Johnny Thompson, before he passed away, even said it, Fringe is modern vaudeville. Mm-hmm. Although the big difference is instead of it being a variety format, everyone gets their 45 to an hour.
Yeah, it's mostly plays, one-man shows, and magic fits really, really well in. There's a lot of magicians who do the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
And then in America, Indy is very popular because Taylor Martin really worked the audience up to support magicians there.
Yeah.
Cincinnati is still application-based, but if you somehow get in that one, they'll love you.
Yeah.
Then Orlando is the biggest in the country. Mm-hmm. Those would be the big ones I would check out if I were you and wanted to do an American Fringe is Indy, Cincinnati, and Orlando.
Well, Cody, thanks so much for dropping by the podcast. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and can't wait to see where you go next, and we'll have to have you back on soon.
Oh, it's always an honor to do anything for Penguin, because I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for the things I've learned from Penguin over the years.
We really appreciate hearing that, you know, because we work very hard to put this stuff out, and whenever we see young, successful people like you doing great things, it's awesome.
I appreciate that very much.
That's going to do it for this week, kids. Thanks so much to Cody for being on the show, and thanks to you for listening. Don't forget to tune in to the Penguin Magic Awards tomorrow on YouTube. We have some great surprises in store for you, and we're looking forward to honoring incredible artists that we've worked with over the last year. As always, we're a weekly podcast, so be sure to like and subscribe as well as share your favorite episodes on the social media platform you've been shopping for electric vehicle accessories on. If you wanted to reach out to me about anything on this week's show, you'll have to send me a message through my new car's infotainment system. I just bought a Chevy Bolt, and I live the all-electric life now, baby. But if searching for charging spots for your EV isn't your cup of tea, you can always hit me up on Instagram at Eric Tate. That's at E-R-I-K-T-A-I-T. From me and everyone else here at the P3 Magic Studios. Practice, practice, perform.